This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Mr. Pete Dillon.
Ma'am Serena Ryan. Lady Serena Ryan.
I like lady. I don't like being called ma'am. I got called ma'am the other day by a little baby dyke and I wanted to thump her blind.
Oh, thump her blind.
I did.
Your politeness.
And not in a sexual way.
Well, that's not a word you'd use.
I wouldn't because I'm a lady.
Having been privy to some of those conversations in the Magna.
I know. Well, we're just fresh out of the Magna and back from Canberra, as you know.
And can I just say, thank goodness spring has sprung in our lives here in Victoria. Mm. What a most magnificent day we enjoyed.
It's been exquis. I've absolutely loved it.
That's good for my hay fevers.
I know. Well, we've talked about your hay fevers and needing to have a clean shaven face.
Yeah, now this is interesting. Where is this research?
Look, I read some research online and I had a link, I think it was through The Age, and I read it on the weekend that there is a bit of research flying around that says if you're a bloke and you suffer from hay fever,
i.e. Pete Dillon,
having facial hair actually traps pollen and continues to throw it up into your nose and into your throat, into your gob.
One word, my dear. Mm. Antihistamines once a day.
Well, you know, I mean, antihistamines with wine is quite nice also.
Yes, I did. Helps with the sleeping. Yeah. That's why I try and have my antihistamine, my once daily in the morning, because then it won't interfere with any consumption later in the day should that occur.
Mm, I'm a big Finergan fan.
No, Finergan knocks me fair for a six. I actually use a generic chemist's own brand, and I find it's the best I've found. After all these years of popping every particular type of antihistamine for hay fever, I found a chemist owned brand and it works a treat.
And you've heard it here first, people. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on yes, Joy 94.9. It's a few minutes after 11 p.m.
program, I think.
Yes, Pete's got his hay fever under control, just for those of you that are fretting about that.
Oh, well, and must they be fretting? Indeed. Now, we're back from Canberra. Did you have a good time?
Look, I did have a good time. We met some fantastic people out there. We were quite thrilled to go, and it was wonderful being up there and being in Canberra on the day of the carbon tax being passed through. That we had a really interesting vibe in the hallowed halls.
All those blue rinse folk.
I'm loving the protests. I don't think we protest enough. We're far too polite. And look, we do need to say hello to Jen and Jen in Tasmania, the wonderful lesbians that we chatted to last week in the studio.
The gorgeous boys from Brisbane, Michael and Alan. Oh, which had me in tears.
Oh, look, we had a little bit of a weep, and I kept gravitating towards them to give a little smooch, actually. They're very sweet. And the two Jens have been in contact since we got back to Canberra, and they send their best, and they're doing some wonderful work in Tasmania, and we're going to keep in touch with them because their profile around marriage equality is building. So I think they're a couple to watch.
They are. And given they're not from Hobart or Lonnie, they're actually from Ulverston, which is a small community 15-20 minutes from Launceston, which makes it a little more difficult, I think, if you're living in a regional area, which we did discover with some new friends we made from Shepparton and the Grampians as well.
Indeed, and we met the lovely Matthew Roden, who's a very long, tall drink of gin and tonic English guy that's now back in the Northern Territory. And he was just wonderful. He's been married in the UK, always been civilly partnered in the UK to a wonderful man. And so it's really interesting chatting to Matthew as well, because his experience in the UK is very different, obviously, to what we're going through here. And so I think, you know, the whole concept of being in Canberra and the lobbying thing, I think there's a certain merit to that. I think it's an ongoing strategy that can be built upon, and I think that only good things can come from perhaps turning the volume up a bit on the protest and the issue itself. Let's be a little less humble and let's be a little bit more, let's get our passion a bit clearer.
Were we too well-mannered, do you think?
I'm of the opinion that we were. I was thrilled to see people protesting, but I come from a long background of, you know, Irish protesting, and obviously I have this strong IRA pedigree in my bones and in my blood, and it's in all the history books, so it's on the record that my family is from that. So I really feel a fire in my belly to get up and start being a little bit noisier. Other people may not agree with that. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Oh, look, I sit on the fence as far as the noise goes.
It's a bit painful.
Well, firstly, because we saw the reaction that the carbon tax protesters got the piece of legislation went through at 9:40 in the morning or thereabouts. The protest happened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so it was all a bit late.
No, it was happening when we arrived that morning. I tweeted a photo. They were all at the front.
Oh, they were there. They were but there. There was no noise from them. It was a physical presence, but the noise, the actual protest and the chanting happened all too late.
Well, I don't know. I started to hear some chanting and some expulsion in the main corridor at about 11:30.
Mm.
So I also think that, you know, protesting is a really valuable tool for social change. It, you know, you want to agitate the masses, and I think they were doing that. And certainly they cornered the market on the media coverage, and I think that as a strategy that's quite smart.
Yeah, but I just want to go back to sort of being on the fence. On the other side, I see the need for volume. But then do we set ourselves up to cop a bath from people like, which we'll talk about a bit later.
We're going to talk about the lovely Divine. Miranda Devine. Look, I think, you know, as it relates to, you know, the Miranda Devines of the world, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Yes.
I think the strategy is possibly not entirely clear.
Mm.
And there's scope for all sorts of interpretations around how we make our point.
For
and
sure.
I think the length and breadth of it's important. We're going to go to a song now. We're going to hear a bit of Dido. She's singing Thank You. I'd prefer you didn't.
Okay.
Thanks, love.
Joy 94.9.
It's that time of the month again, Pete. I've worked out that when Miranda Devine has a little bit of a rant, I'm wondering if it's when she's a little bit hormonal.
Oh, I don't think she needs to be hormonal to be ranting just between you and me.
If you look at the cycle of you know, stuff that she writes, clearly
she's always
her hormones brings out her homophobe.
Well, maybe
because,
it does.
You know, look, she's I love how the Sunday Telegraph has described her as a leading columnist.
Well, she is, though. Oh. For them, yeah. Like Andrew Bolt is a leading columnist here in Melbourne.
That's kind of an oxymoron when you talk about that in context with Andrew Bolt. But look, you know, she's got this article that I read, you know, on Sunday morning, and it's called Call Off the Thought Police. Look, we know that she's an outspoken right-wing stirrer, and we know that she's really, you know, red rag to a bull for readers. You know, she's got a really against-the-tide view on gay issues and claims the more militant army of the gay lobby is heaping vitriol and vile abuse on people who disagree with its agenda. Personal vilification is the chief tactic of the activists, whether they are gay campaigners, militant libertarians, or simply bystanders using the issue as a badge of an identity. You know, apart from the fact that I think she's a raving lunatic, she actually taps into something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which was around the stuff about let's not vilify the man, let's vilify the content around the Kennett issue, okay? So, you know, if she'd just left it at that, I'd be thinking, okay, there's a measure of honesty and debate in there that I can participate in. But you know, she's now, you know, saying that the opponents of same-sex marriage are being dragged before anti-discrimination tribunals with complaints that are at times withdrawn at the 11 hour, you know, but mud sticks and the time, expense and stress of the process can make the defenders of traditional marriage inclined to keep their heads down in the future. Well, clearly that's not the case. People are not keeping their head down. They continue to bang the drum of opposition.
Absolutely. What got me in that article she wrote, and I did sort of tweet about this on Sunday, is that a lot of what she said is the pot calling the kettle black. For years, we have been vilified. Mm-hmm. We have been the subject of hatred and bigotry from, and the people she quoted, David Van Gend and Jim Wallace from the Australian Christian Lobby, two of the most extreme right-wing fundamentalists.
Who think we should all be drowned at birth, basically.
Well, essentially, you know, two of the most extreme right-wing fundamentalists that for years have made all manner of vitriolic and bilious comment against not just the act, but the sinner as well as the sin, and also are two of the extreme advocates against same-sex marriage equality. So I think that if she is going to present herself as a leading columnist, at some point I would like to see her exercise just a little bit of balance because, you know, she could have
spoken... She's not going to be that popular if she exercises balance, Pete. Isn't the whole thrust of her column about being inflammatory
shock.
And shock value and stimulating discussion that produces the right wingers because they've laid down their $2.50 for the Herald Sun or the Daily Telegraph. It's the most they're going to read.
Yeah, true.
You know, but and again, but this also speaks to the bigger fire in my belly that I have around editorial responsibility. At what point does the Herald and the Daily Telegraph, at what point do they say, you know what, enough's enough? We've gone too far here.
Newspapers. And this is the Murdoch tactic that has been used around the world, in his tabloids in the UK, here. You know, it screams of Murdoch tactics of the more heckles we can raise, the more newspapers we're going to sell. And it's people like you and I that will take that on board and will start to comment. And all this is doing is providing more fodder for her, for Andrew Bolt, and for any one of you know, 1,000 commentators who choose to take an issue and slip onto the right. The column in the monthly that we read on the way to Canberra about Andrew Bolt actually talks about Andrew Bolt being quite a good journalist in the early years. And there's a number of people who are incredibly surprised that he has all of a sudden found this niche and said, I'm going to take this because this is a space that hasn't been claimed, when he actually claimed this sort of right-wing...
It was a fascinating discussion around his absolute intentional positioning of himself in the right wing, because there was a gap in the service provision as it related to writing.
And historically, he's not that fundamentalist, but he's found a space and he will exploit it.
So it's really interesting to me that it's okay for Miranda to have a red hot go at us about, you know, the problems of a fatherless society and the riots.
London.
And then, you know, it's only the fatherless kids of lesbians that you know, light fires and kill people. And yet we've got, she's essentially vilifying us again, but she's just dressing it up as thoughtful debate. And I just wonder, you know, it is the pot calling the kettle black. I was so staggered when I read it on Sunday. I had to read it twice because I thought, you can't be serious, lady. And she's done the typical thing. You know, we go to her for an interview request, nothing. You know, you tweet her, hey, do you want to talk about this? We'd love to chat with you in a pragmatic way, nothing. She fires all the bullets and then she goes under the bunker. She's gutless.
There's absolutely also, gutless. It was interesting to note that the comments system underneath where the blog appeared online was disabled, so people couldn't make comments. So again, that's another little shield to protect Ms. Devine. And you know, as much as I hate to say it, she is a Catholic fundamentalist. And, you know, she's a wonderful voice for the right-wing conservatives of this nation, not just those that sit on the opposition bench federally, but those that sit on the left of politics, who still remain as staunch or maintain a staunch adherence to their Catholicism
around this issue. It's selective adherence, isn't it? There's none of this love thy neighbour. There's none of this, you know, love thy neighbour is one of the Ten Commandments, you know. You know, live and let live. And she clearly doesn't embody that. She's only going to love you if you fall in line with the selection criteria for divine love. If you're white, you know, you're a Caucasian, class. You're middle, you know, you're reasonably well educated, but you've got a little, you know, a dappling of ignorance in there, and that you really don't like having sex with the same gender.
Interesting, and we'll keep following more of the bio that she produces. Bit of a backflip, it seems, from Prime Minister Julia Gillard, with a senior Labour Party source suggesting that Prime Minister Gillard will announce an ALP conscience vote on same-sex marriage as early as next week.
Well, you know, that was meant to be announced yesterday. That was the rumour, and certainly I'm not emboldened by the idea of her doing this. I think she's a very strategic creature, and she's only going to do it because she knows she doesn't have the votes for it.
Well, she knows she's going to lose a vote on the issue at the upcoming Labour Party annual conference in December. She's keen to preempt the debate, but the anonymous but trusted Politico has told the Sydney Star Observer that a conscience vote would occur following the conference rather than beforehand. Now, Rodney Crooms had something to say around this, in that he believes that Ms. Gillard has got to the point where she realises that she's going to fight a losing battle within her own party, which sort of contrary...
I don't agree with that.
I do.
And based on the conversations that we had last week, the two conversations. So we talked to Rob Mitchell, who's the member for McEwen, and Rob is, you know, he's an affable man, I guess. He's an unmarried man, and he came in and said, well, I don't know why you bothered with marriage. Marriage is a bloody waste of time. And so I certainly had a red hot go at him in a polite way, obviously, saying, you know, it's the privilege of your biology that allows you to be that cavalier, because it brings you the privilege of marriage. But he was very clear in saying to us, and you'll remember this, I support same-sex marriage, but my party doesn't, and I won't go against the party.
And well, he won't fall on a political sword to say that he won't try and undo the government, was his point. But I think once it comes to the national conference, and he did state if he's there as a delegate.
Yeah, but if he's there, he was very, very cryptic around it.
He will be absolutely voting for it. He said.
Yeah, but he didn't make any commitment to being there. Now, what would take you away from your party's national conference.
Not all of them will attend. Not all of them get an invite to be there as a delegate.
Yeah, if he declares his position in the affirmative, we can assume he won't be invited.
No, I disagree with that. Absolutely disagree with that.
Okay, well, we don't have to agree.
No, we don't.
So,
we do all too often. Yep. Let's have some messages and come back and have some more national news. This is Salt and Pepper, 20 minutes past 11 almost, here on Joy 94.9.
Your voice, your radio station. Joy 94.9.
And we're back. You know, it's a very interesting debate around marriage equality, and certainly this show is not devoted solely to it, but... you know,
hot ticket item.
Look, it is the hot ticket item to some degree, and certainly, you know, if we look at some of the media coverage last week, we just want to probably overview what happened for us last week. There were 60 of us that went to Parliament House, and we met with more than 40 politicians. Sadly, the Victorian Directorate only met with two people, and they were both in the affirmative. But interesting meetings nonetheless. You know, Alex Greenwich is the spokesperson for the Australian Marriage Equality, and he stated at a press conference that we attended, "We're here to deliver the message that the issue of marriage equality should not be about politics, it should be about people." And so he's predicting the disconnect between the attitudes of some politicians and the public would continue to weaken. You know, I think Alex is really confident, and I don't share that confidence. I don't think that we're any closer to marriage equality than we have been. We're probably marginally closer, but I think there's a very significant battle ahead. But I really liked what he said around, you know, you don't solve discrimination by entrenching it.
No, you don't.
I thought that was really clever. And he's also talked about, we know that internationally civil unions don't work. I mean, I know people that have been married civilly and, you know, it works for them. So interesting day in Canberra. I guess stay tuned on what's next.
Just on that interesting point from the other side of politics, and this is something that Rodney Croom has stated, an increasing number of coalition MPs support marriage equality and want to be able to vote for it. And there's talk of Tony Abbott's comments around the conscience vote from the coalition that would, in fact, probably change before it comes to a vote at that point. So it is a very interesting topic for us to be following and see where all that goes to.
Yeah, I guess it's stay tuned, isn't it?
Very much so.
There's a whole range of strategies we can be rolling out there. Let's talk about transphobia.
Well, some good news out of Queensland. A fellow has been ordered to pay $15,000 in damages to his transgender neighbour as a result of ongoing vilification and transphobic harassment. QCAT, the Queensland Civil and Administration Tribunal, handed down their decision to Jason Lewis Ronoff after hearing how he threatened to burn down the house of his transgender neighbour, Joe Broshenan, thanks to news.com. He also claimed that she kept their genitals in a jar, which
is just... That's just revolting.
The member from QCAT, Dr. Bridget Cullen-Mandikos, said that transphobia within our community continues to lead to victimisation and violence and disenfranchises persons who we should equally value as contributing members of our society. I think it's interesting. This has almost been an ongoing neighbour spat from these two. He claims, Mr. Ronoff claims that, you know, there's been ongoing aggression towards him from Joe Broshenan. I'm not sure how Broshenan identifies because this article doesn't really give us a hint.
We just know that there's a gender identity, you know, issue there, and that there's been a case of transphobia that's been held up in our district court in Queensland, which is really good news because it's every little bit counts when it goes against the hate crimes and the discrimination.
Absolutely.
Look, we're coming up to 25 minutes past 11. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9. I think we're just about to have a little bit of a song, and it's by Casey Chambers.
Oh, I do like a bit of Casey.
It's called The Captain.
Love it.
Joy 94.9.
Well, I don't have as many friends because
she's coming with a tennis racket.
I know. What is that about? Bloody tennis racket?
It's 11:30 at night, Noni Hazelhurst. Please explain.
Nancy likes to play tennis.
Bloody tennis racket and a visor at this time of night.
Well, you said
Have you been to a costume party?
You said you wanted a racket, so I...
And we were talking about your boobs, the rack.
Oh, rack.
Get your rack out.
Get your rack out.
Oh, I thought we were going to go and play
pool. She likes, she's so
literal. Oh, she's very literal. Very well, why don't we have a bit of a talk about sports? First of all, welcome, Noni Hazel.
Thanks.
In your tennis whites, no less.
Yes.
Look at you go, love.
Serena was laughing at me earlier because I said that I watched the Australian championship, the final of the Australian Women's Championships of Indoor Lawn Bowls.
Oh, that's just sad.
On the ABC.
She's a big lesbian.
And I do have a compulsion or an obsession to watch sport on the television and can pretty much watch anything excepting cars or motorcycles whizzing around a track. Because I just see that as an exercise
like to be
in futility.
Them.
No desire whatsoever.
Just round, isn't it?
And I can't watch boxing or Muay Thai or any of that martial arts.
I can't watch anything that involves blood,
violence.
Exchange of blood.
No.
But is it so much that you have an addiction to watching sport or you have an addiction to sitting on the couch?
No, because I don't have an addiction to sitting on the couch. No. I don't have enough time in my day to get done what I need to do.
That's because you're watching sports.
Because I'm watching sport. But no, I spent the weekend, a couple of weekends ago, with my brother who had an operation on his knee.
Mm.
And I watched three codes of football, so AFL, NRL, and then the Rugby Union World Cup. And then the next I know, we're watching the lawn bowls. And I have no problem with sitting there watching sport. And it was actually quite an intriguing game of lawn bowls.
Oh, I can just feel the tension.
The tension
dripping.
It says a lot about what else is on television, doesn't it, really?
It tells me you're watching the ABC. But
there used to be an arts program at that time.
Yeah, I know. Now, this is the other thing. There's so much sport that I think there's less time for arts on the television and less culture.
There's never been any time for arts and culture on the television, less than ever now.
But it's what we talked about a couple of weeks ago around the Wags and Slags at the Brownlows. It's cheap television.
Well, there's a confusion, I think, between entertainment and culture. You know, you look at Google News, you get world, Australia, business, science,
weird,
and tech, sport, and then you get entertainment. And invariably, that's full of things like, you know, the Kardashian sisters or...
Who are they?
Victoria Beckham.
I know her.
It's nobody
Bitch
that's actually
to my husband.
Culturally excellent or artistically excellent. Oh, Margaret Olley might die, that might get a Guernsey. But, you know, there's never... Entertainment should have a separate column to the arts. The arts don't even feature on Google News.
Because entertainment is more along the lines
of
gossip.
The new Smurf movie.
You know, yeah. And it's gossip and reviews and that sort of stuff.
Well, the Smurf movie makes it onto the news on commercial networks.
But also, if there's something big happening in the sporting field, so, you know, we could have something very big happening in the world of a political nature or where there's a death of some description.
Mm.
If something's happened locally in Melbourne that's got a sporting flavour, that will be the lead news item.
So if Brendan Favola's got pissed again or being caught at a pokies again.
If he's pissing on someone in public, then that's the lead news item.
Well, look at the difference between the reception for Cadell Evans and the reception that Geoffrey Rush got when he got his first Oscar.
Cadell Evans is not a hero. I'm sorry.
Well, and more than Geoffrey Rush. But
the use of the word hero
Geoffrey Rush got
some
coverage, but he certainly didn't get a hero's parade down
the
road.
Didn't stop Fed Square.
Let me put it to you, if it was Hugh Jackman that had have won Geoffrey's award versus Cadell Evans, do you think Hugh would have got a bit more because he's younger, sexier?
I don't think so. No. I don't think so. I just think this whole need, I mean, I'm a media maker, you're a media maker, we're all media
content makers.
We work in the media, and I just don't know why we have to eulogise people who win races.
Well, this is it. And I mean, we do it with everything. We've done it with horses, like Maccabi Diva. It was a bloody horse, for heaven's sake. Okay, it won the Melbourne Cup three times. Probably has a lot to do with the jockey and the trainer, but let's talk about the horse. In Port Lincoln, there is a statue of Maccabi Diva in the main street. Now, that horse has never been to Port Lincoln. And the only reason they've got the statue, I'm dead serious, the only reason they have the statue is because Tony Santick, who is the owner of Maccabi Diva, did some tuna fishing over there or something. He lived there for a while. And so there's this statue of the horse, life size,
brings the
great big bloody
in.
Thing, of Maccabi Diva, who never went to Port Lincoln.
Mm.
The amount of money that it would have cost to do the ticker tape parade for Cadell Evans.
Close off St Kilda Road.
Close off St Kilda Road, bring Fed Square to a standstill. The amount of money that would have cost, I hate to calculate it.
Stop the
boats. Then you've got a definite, you know, a culling of arts and culture programs at the ABC, for instance. So there's a definite reduction in content. We're going with a lot of free-to-air sports stuff. Sam Stosur just won the US Open. She's had no heroes parade. She's a woman.
She got something in Brisbane.
She's a woman.
She got something in Brisbane when she got home because that's home. Well, Gold Coast is home. Not particularly. No offence to anybody living north of the border.
I think one of the problems is that the arts are becoming more and more associated with elite, intellectual, lefty.
Is that the arts' fault, though?
No, of course it's not the arts.
Well, whose fault is that the arts is all of a sudden perceived as an elitist, lefty, intellectual sort of thing?
The arts have traditionally been seen in this country as a luxury add-on, not as an essential part of life.
But they form our cultural identity, so there's got to be...
Oh, no, they don't.
I don't think they do. I think the stuff like...
Footy and Cadell Evans,
you know, Cadell Evans and, you know, this sort of stuff is what is informing our cultural landscape. And that's what we promote and that's what we report on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
The people who've made it overseas are claimed as part of our cultural identity.
Oh, we claim Russell Crowe as our own, but he's a New Zealander.
Yeah, and the Peter Weirs and the Fred
and Mel Gibson, who's a Californian, Nicole Kidman, who was born in Hawaii.
Yeah, but the existence of culture that's alive and functioning in this society here today is not seen as important or valid. It's not seen as really essential. And yet all the studies prove that if you have music in your life, if you have art in your life, if you go and see amazing live performances in your life, great theatre, great writers, that enriches your life, increases your intelligence and your ability to interact with your fellow human beings.
And your quotient for happiness.
Yes.
But on the other hand, you know, any show that comes from overseas as a theatre show...
Empathy, not just happiness.
Opens in Melbourne rather than opening anywhere else in the country.
So?
Which says a bit about our cultural arts.
No, it doesn't. It just says that the government makes it easy for these people to produce their shows here. Mm. You know, it's not... And also, I don't particularly regard big musicals as the arts. You know, they're populist entertainment, and there's nothing wrong with that. But
they're a really strong merchandising option. You know, they have really good knock-on effects for other things.
Yeah, and look
and
at the struggle,
tourism industry that it brings.
Look at the struggle the VCA had to retain its autonomy and its standards of excellence, and the amount of money that was devoted to that compared to the amount of money that's put into every gold medal that we win at the Olympics.
Mm.
You know, you can go to the AIS and you don't pay HEX, I believe.
Mm.
But VCA students have to pay it. You do end up with a debt. Do you?
Yes, from the AIS, absolutely.
Still, they do spend much more money on sports, developing sports people.
Oh, look, I agree with you. Theatre companies struggle for every dollar. And this is probably why I watch so much sport. But when you see that, you know, La Mama a couple of years ago was on the brink of closing and it was only through...
community
the efforts of community that it stayed open.
Put it this way. In London now, they're digitalising a lot of productions, which I've been saying we should be doing here for years. And they go, oh, it's too hard because you'd have to pay the actors. They go and film performances and they put them on, they make them available digitally. If you had the choice, I probably know the answer, if you had the choice between an afternoon of women's lawn bowls on telly or the pick of any theatrical production that had been done in Australia.
Oh, darling, be theatre all the way.
Well, there you go.
I'm such a song and dance boy.
But there you go. Mm. I mean, it's not available. It's not readily available. Sport is ubiquitous.
Mm.
You can't escape it.
And it's also really, really pricey to go to the theatre.
It is very pricey
to go and buy, you know, to go and get a B-reserve ticket to Love Never Dies before it closes is what I would spend on a very lovely, long, languorous Friday lunch.
What does it cost to go to the footy?
Oh, 40, I buy a membership, but it's $20 to get in for general admin.
Mm.
Throw on the price of a few expensive beers.
You've got a couple of beers and...
You've done a pie. You've done... Oh, no, you catch the train, lovey.
All right.
So you're done for $50.
Yeah. It's about the price of a theatre ticket.
Yeah.
You know.
You can go to most theatres for $50.
Wait. Absolutely.
Not musicals. No, I'm not talking about big musicals.
You know, we saw Julius Caesar quite recently and the tickets were around that price.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a fantastic show. It was
and
really...
And get this... QI, they're coming out, Alan Davis and think.
Oh my God, with Stephen Fry, I will kill.
$100-something for a tick. Hello.
I will pay whatever.
Really? No, I won't.
I love the two of them. I would marry Stephen Fry.
And his madness. Good on you.
Yeah. Awesome. I love his madness.
I love Stephen Fry too, but I'm not going to pay $100-something for something I can get on cable for nothing.
Well, actually, I could probably just go out to the Laird and wait there for him, couldn't I?
I'd just go to the stage door. But we started with sport. I do think
that sport and culture
should not ever be on the front pages.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a lead news item
ever.
Not on the news, not on the 6 o'clock bulletins. No.
Have
maybe
a front page
on the weekend.
Of the grand finals.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, but I just
what if there was an AFL player came out and it made front page of tomorrow's Herald Sun?
I don't think it's not a lead news item. It should be the front page of all the gay rags. Absolutely.
Well, the games would be all over it like a fat kid on a Smartie.
Well, they would be, but
it's
still don't think...
News. It's still sports news.
It needs to go to the back of the newspaper. Yep, that's where the sports news lives.
And there's
real
pages
news.
And pages and pages and pages of it, whereas the arts is sort of half a page next to the crossword and the weather maps.
Yes.
It's just squeezed in. It's an accidental news item.
And all, you know, all the reviews that the critics do are cut to about half.
Can we start
length.
A revolution?
No. Nah.
Mm. All right. Well, you go and get the bus.
It's too late.
Serena and I will start a revolution.
We could do an arts program. See, I'd love to have an arts program that was more like the Coulda Beans on television.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Not
that'd
up
be
itself.
Brilliant.
Oh, well, let's make one.
Let's just not have Vici on there.
I'm available. Let's stop this now and go and do it.
All
okay,
right.
You go
on
and get out of your tennis whites and get rid of your racket and we'll get a microphone for you.
That's my art.
Yeah, I beg your pardon.
Thanks,
we'll see you
Nones.
Next time.
Good night. Getting my rock on, Pete.
Yes, I was having a bit of a wiggle in my seat.
How's Noni?
She's outrageous.
She's hilarious tonight. She's yes. on fire.
I wonder if she might have had a glass of
I think she probably
sherry.
Had a couple of cigs on the bus.
Mm.
Can you imagine Noni Hazelhurst in her tennis whites on a freaking bus at 11 o'clock at night?
Bless her heart. I'm glad she wore them, though.
She's fabulous. Okay, do you, I mean, most people would know that we like to do the odd tweet.
Oh, yes, we're a pair of twits.
We are. We're twits. We tweet a fair bit. But there's a conservative dude in the British Parliament who, you know, he sent an outrageous tweet. His name is James Maliff and he's a cabinet member of the Tory-controlled Wickham District Council in Buckinghamshire. And basically, he tweeted, "There is no doubt the PM is wrong on this issue. We may as well legalise marriage to animals. Crude, I concede, but no apology."
Whack job. Now, this
not
is after
bad.
David Cameron's announcement that but by probably the end of next year there will be full equality in the UK.
Absolutely.
And same-sex marriage. And this from a Conservative PM. Are you listening, Julia?
Yeah, hello, Ranga. Tune in. Look, the tweet message was described as ill-advised and Pete's just having a little laugh and completely unacceptable by Tory party officials. And it's since been deleted, but you know what? It hit the ether, so it's there, baby. He's later apologised, saying, "I'm deeply, deeply sorry for the offence I've caused," when in fact he was crudely conceding no apology. "I was not intending to be offensive." One wonders what the intention of the comment was. "It was much more a comment to try and establish where we draw the line on these things. My comment was that there was no doubt the PM has got this wrong and you may as well legalise marriage with animals."
And this is the apology.
This is the apology. So he's just regrouped. He's politely reframed the original tweet. Wanker.
But he's still saying that it was not meant to be anti-gay, but you may as well legalise marriage with animals. Sorry, Mr. whatever your name is, Mr. Maliff, animals can't sign a marriage licence.
Yeah, and what language do we do that marriage ceremony in?
Oh, goodness knows.
Oh, Jesus wept.
Woofing or meowing?
Meow, meow.
Hey, perhaps he needs to talk to Sir Cliff Richard. Oh,
love
bless
a bit
his
of Cliff.
Heart. Cliff has spoken out in favour of gay marriage, insisting same-sex couples should be granted equal rights. I wonder if this is opening the door of Sir Cliff's closet.
I don't think he's opening the door to his closet anytime soon.
Well, he's supposed to have been celibate since God knows when. Gay partners in the UK are currently only able to enter into civil partnerships, as we mentioned before, which give them the same legal consequences, and I like the word consequences, of heterosexual unions, but are not officially recognised as marriage. David Cameron's announced that, you know, he would
yada,
like to
yada,
see
yada.
Yada. And Sir Cliff, with his lying, walking, sleeping, talking, living doll, has come out in support to say yes.
He's
so
just fabulous, isn't he? He would be such a great spokesperson for the gay community because he's gayer than Moomba.
He is
respects.
Indeed.
Not that we're saying he's gay, but you
no,
know. Good on you, Cliff. Loving your work.
Campus Christmas.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of old blokes in Syracuse.
The story did make me weep.
They've got a 52-year relationship behind them. And one of them is called Frederick Marvin, and he keeps a day book for every year. He's a 91-year-old concert pianist, and he has boxes full of little black books where he wrote what he ate, what music he played, and where he travelled. So in his Syracuse house on a recent afternoon, he pulled the book from 1959. He was 39, and he flips to April 22. And halfway down the page, he talks about his travels and having met Ernst Schuh. This is the love of his life. They found each other in the Abbey of St. Florian, an Austrian monastery. Look, they've been together for 52 years.
And finally,
they're getting married.
This story is amazing. It talks about, they did have a civil union ceremony in Austria last year where same-sex civil unions were legalised, but they've chosen now a full marriage service in New York, where they have lived on and off for most of that 52 years.
And they've had a wonderful life. They've been friends with Salvador Dali. They've, you know, Marvin's played concerts across the US, Europe, and his partner has managed his career. You know, they've got a modest house in Houston Avenue off Meadowbrook, and they've made a home, they've made a life.
Mm.
And after 52 years of loving each other, at the ripe old age of 91 and 92, they're going to make it legal.
I just think it's so sweet. They there's a couple of things that they've done. They've made a quilt out of their ties because they both have hundreds of ties. So they've made this quilt, and it sits on one of the chairs in their living room. And the other part of the story that got me a bit
tearful.
There's a frame, and it has all these pictures of small birds, and one of them gave to the other a picture ongoing from this artist of these birds, and wrote a message. And so, as a gift back, this was framed, and all these pictures of these beautiful birds with these little notes. It's just such a lovely, lovely story. And again, it's just solidifying that message that this is love and love.
It really does consolidate all of the guff, all of the mess and noise around how this issue is such a no-brainer. It's just about love. And,
absolutely.
You know, I read a quote somewhere that, you know, when it comes to same-sex relationships, genitals are just God's way of accessorizing, you know, and that's...
Oh, I do care for that.
It's not a shabby little comment, and you know me, I don't believe in the God, but no. I just thought it was delightful. It's really that simple. It's just about love.
It is. Now, speaking of love, I have a bit of a crush on a fellow by the name of Zachary Quinto.
Also known as Dr. Spock.
Yes, he was from Star Trek and Heroes. He came out as gay, and the catalyst for that was the suicide of New Yorker Jamie Rottermeier. He posted on his blog that the death of this bullied teenager had troubled him, and he said, "It's fine to live as gay, but I need to live as openly as gay." And so he's... While chatting about his new movie, Margin Call, in which he plays a villain, this very handsome 34-year-old outed himself to New York Magazine, saying that he loved taking to the stage for award-winning AIDS in the 80s play Angels in America, said that that had a fairly big impact on him, and says he's fortunate to have been born when he was born and not to have to witness the decimation of an entire generation of amazingly talented, otherwise vital men. This is a beautiful story. We're going to play his It Gets Better message in a second, but on the back of that, news that WNN announcer and American ABC newsreader Dan Kloeffler has outed himself on television on the back of Zach Quinto's message. So
let's have a listen.
It's this groundswell.
It is a groundswell.
I'm Zachary Quinto, and I want to add to the chorus of voices rising up against the kind of hatred and ridicule that led to the senseless and heartbreaking suicides of Asher Brown, Seth Walsh, Billy Lucas, Tyler Clementi, and Raymond Chase in just the past few months in this country. And those are only the names that we've come to know. There are countless other teens and young adults who are struggling to find a sense of identity and belonging in a chaotic and often unforgiving world. And to you, I say it gets better. There is help to be found. There are places to turn. There are people who will listen. The TrevorProject.org, 1-866-4-U-TREVOR, is a place to start. Start there. Start anywhere. But start by believing that life is worth living, and you will find your way. And I'm proud to be a voice that stands to remind you of that anytime you ever come close to forgetting it.
Well, that's a really compelling message. Mm. Look, it's coming up to 10 to midnight. It's almost the bewitching hour. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9.
Speaking of bewitching, a voice that's bewitching.
Which is?
Oh, you chose the music, Dale.
Oh, I did. I think we're going to have a bit of Nick Cave.
A boy from Warwick Nabil, where he was born, Warwick Nabil, in the northwest of Victoria.
Oh, the Prince of Darkness. Mm. It's called Far From Me. And it sort of ties into, you know, the loss that Zach's talking about.
Mm. It's beautiful.
A We're wearing our regalia. It's time to award the Donald at 4 minutes to midnight.
I always feel I should be standing to attention when that's played, and not in a dirty way.
Don't I always feel like peculiar. A conscientious objector when I hear fanfare. I think, oh, how can I get my rascal on?
You're always getting your rascal
on. I know.
You
I'm just a natural rebel. I'm in my 40s and I'm yet to outgrow it, so I've just decided I won't.
I was surprised at your behaviour in Canberra. I thought you could have been more of a rascal. Especially when Fred and I walked into the cafeteria at Parliament House and you just let him go. I thought she's going to be at this man like a...
But I tweeted the bejesus out of it.
I noticed you did. Now, candidates for the Donald, I've chosen 3 candidates and I'm going to leave the vote to you.
Okay, run me through them.
Entirely your decision. Mm-hmm. Jason Ronoff, the fellow in Queensland who's been, you know, giving a bit of transphobia to his neighbour.
Mm-hmm. Bit of argy-bargy.
Yep. James Maliff, the tweeter from the UK who's, you know, saying that, you know, letting same-sex couples get married, you may as well let us marry our animals, which has some merit.
Mm-hmm.
And Miranda Devine for her fine piece of work again in Sunday's paper.
Oh, look, it's really a very difficult choice this week. I mean, each of them stands quite solidly on their own merits.
Mm.
You know, the conservative Tory boy, I mean, twat.
Yes.
The transphobia, that's never actually going to be okay, I think.
No, never.
I'm really pleased to see that the courts have awarded the appropriate damages. It probably doesn't really satisfy the scope of the trauma, but, you know, to some way it acknowledges the importance of acknowledging people's rights to be.
Yes.
And then there's Lady Devine.
I think Lady is a stretch, mate.
I think Lady Devine's a stretch as well. So, look, I think I don't want to give her the Donald simply because I don't want to give her any more oxygen.
But we've given her oxygen all the way through the program. We may as well throw a trophy at her.
Yeah, well, I think for me it's a tie. It's a tie. It's a tie between the transphobia guy in Queensland and...
Miranda Devine.
So we offer a tied Donald tonight.
Again.
Because both of them are promoting vilification and discrimination.
Which is unnecessary.
So we award you. And look, it's 2 minutes to midnight. It's time to go.
It's time to get in the Magna and get our bums right, back lovely. Across that bridge. We'll be back next week.
Good night, everyone. Good Thanks, night. Greg.
Some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? When everything's a little clearer.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.